Where did we come from? How did the universe come into being? Are we alone in the universe? All my life, I have sought to understand the universe.
Yeah. Bad boy, baby. Loon.
You're listening to AstroTalk, CITR's weekly astronomy talk show with your host, Marco.
Welcome, this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Thank you for listening, Tim. Tim is my buddy, and he listens, so thanks, Tim. And he tells me my podcasts are too low, so I'll try to speak higher. So what's happening in astronomy? Well, it's been a few weeks since Stephen Hawking passed away. And he said that he thinks we only have 100 years left on this planet for various reasons, pollution, global warming, maybe self-destruction, maybe a meteor. Anyway, I've been reading about Greenland where the ice is melting faster now. And in the summer in Greenland, pools of ice melts, form pools of lakes or water, and the water evaporates or goes underground through fissures or cracks in the ground, and then it goes out into the ocean. So this is happening at a much faster rate than scientists predicted. And when the permafrost thaws, then the leaves and the plant life that had died before, they will release their carbon into the atmosphere. So it's going to accelerate this. So looks dangerous. They said within 30, 40 years, the Earth could have 20 feet higher sea levels. Well, we'll see. It's about 6 meters. Anyway, I'm going to talk about black holes. And, of course, what else to talk about but dark matter? Dark matter is the stuff that we don't know what it is. So they say dark matter because 95% of the universe is made of dark matter or dark energy. And they're doing experiments. They're trying to figure out what it is, but they can't. Is it a new particle? Is it some kind of, we have to rework the equations of gravity, account for what they think dark matter is doing. So anyway, it's a big mystery. I wish Einstein were here and Hawking were here so they could help us figure it out. So anyway, I'm going to talk about dark matter today. I'm also going to talk about a vast black hole swarm that surrounds the Milky Way's heart. And just one more thing before I start, I applied to be a NASA ambassador for the OSIRIS-REx mission. So that's OSIRIS-REx. And what they're going to do with that, they're going to go to an asteroid. They're going to go to asteroid Bennu. And they're on their way now. In a few years, they're going to, get close to it, do a bunch of science on it. And then they're going to get close enough where they can get samples and then return it to Earth. So this is just another sign that NASA's trying to move out into the solar system. Anyway, let's talk about black hole hearts. Well, scientists believe there is a chance there's not just a supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy. It's called Sagittarius A star, or just it's abbreviated SAG A star, and it's about 4.5 million solar masses, so it's very big. But they think there's a swarm of black holes that should be around it, something like 20 to 30 black holes, but they've only found about, I think, 5 dozen. So they're looking for all these other black holes, and it's harder to see. Well, we can't see it, can we? We don't see black holes. So I'm going to read this article. It's by Charles Chi Choi, C-H-O-I, from space.com. It's dated April 4th, and it says, vast black hole swarm may surround the Milky Way's heart. So the Milky Way's heart, again, it's a supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy, Sagittarius A star, or they just SAG, S-A-G, big A, and a star, like an asterisk. Okay, so a supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way is surrounded by a swarm of smaller black holes. According to new research, scientists are able to pinpoint at least 12 black hole binaries where the black hole is siphoning off material from a companion star. A swarm of hundreds of black holes may surround the giant black hole at the heart of our Milky Way, and you study fine. So let's just get this down again. The center of our galaxy, it's called Sagittarius A star. It's a supermassive black hole. So supermassive black holes are millions or billions of the times the mass of our sun. And just an ordinary black hole is like 5 or 10 masses or 50 masses of our sun. So 50 solar masses, 10 solar masses, 5 solar masses. So supermassive black holes are in a different league. And so we know there's a supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy. And astronomers believe that these supermassive black holes are essential to the creation of the galaxy, and they power the galaxy. So they're not just bad things, they do good things. And now they think there's hundreds or thousands of more black holes that surround this giant supermassive black hole. At the hearts of most, if not all, galaxies, supermassive black holes exist with masses of millions to billions times the size of our sun, or the mass of our sun. For example, at the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way, lies Sagittarius A star, about 4.5 million solar masses in size. I think I knew the mass of the black hole at the center of the Andromeda galaxy, but I forgot. Maybe I'll look it up in the break. A key way in which scientists think supermassive black holes grow is by engulfing stellar mass black holes equal in mass to a few solar masses. Learning how that growth process works is vital to understanding the effects they can have on the evolution of the galaxy. Well, what I do recall is scientists know that there's solar size, solar mass black holes, what's 5, 10, 20 times the mass of our sun, and then there's supermassive black holes, millions or billions of times the mass of our sun. But there are no intermediate-sized black holes, and they're puzzled as to why that happens. There's no black holes that are 1,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 or 50,000 times the mass of the sun. So there's only supermassive black holes, and then there's solar mass black holes. So it's a puzzle. Why is there no intermediate-sized black holes? Okay, so when you view, scientists viewed Sagittarius A star, a supermassive black hole, the center of the Milky Way, with the Chandra X-ray Observatory. In their picture, it's circled green. A black hole, the black hole is visible as a bright spot because it is emitting some of its occasional X-ray flares. Surrounding it are other X-ray sources caused by binary systems with smaller black holes. So let's look at that. So Chandra can see the black hole because it emits X-ray flares, and Chandra can see the X-ray flares. It can't really see the black hole. It can see the flares emitted by the black hole. So why does the black hole emit X-ray flares? Well, when it devours matter, when it eats matter, this is one of the explanations, I believe. Matter is like a traffic jam. It's circling, trying to get in, but it's got to wait its turn because there's a lot of matter getting in. So what happens is some of this matter, it gets very energetic. It rubs against each other. It rubs against itself. It could be other explanations. But then it gets so hot, it emits X-rays. And so they can see that. And surrounding the X-ray sources, there are other X-ray sources caused by binary systems. So what's a binary system? It's two stars. So you might have a star circling another star, and one of the stars is siphoning off matter from the other star. So it's accumulating on this other star, which will eventually cause it to go supernova. And so that could emit X-ray flares. So for decades, astronomers have looked for up to 20,000 black holes that previous research predicted should be concentrated around the Milky Way's core. Sagittarius A star is surrounded by a halo of gas and dust that provides the perfect breeding ground for massive stars, which can then give rise to black holes after they die. So, or so says lead author Chuck Haley, a co-director of Astrophysics Lab at the Columbia University in New York. In addition, a powerful gravitational pull from the supermassive black hole Sagittarius A star can pull in black holes from outside this halo. So there's a halo outside the area of the black hole. I believe it's a couple of light years in width, and it contains a lot of gas, and stars can form in that, big stars. And when they die, they create a supernova, and they either become a neutron star or they become a black hole, and there's already black holes in there. So says lead author Chuck Haley, and quote, "The Milky Way is really the only galaxy we can study how supermassive black holes interact with little ones, because we can't see their interactions in other gravities, in other galaxies. In that sense, this is the only lab we have to study this phenomenon," end quote. So there's lots of stuff going on in other galaxies, but they're so far away, it's hard to see things. And remember, the Hubble telescope is the only telescope that can see very far away. But until now, researchers have failed to detect such a heavy concentration of black holes around the center of our Milky Way. And this concentration, this heavy concentration of black holes, is called a density cusp. So densitycusp, density cusp. So they think that this density cusp should surround the center of our Milky Way, and it should have tens and thousands of black holes. But only about 5 dozen known black holes exist in the entire galaxy. So our Milky Way is 100,000 light years wide, and there's supposed to be 10 to 20,000 black holes in a region just 6 light years wide, but no one is able to find them. So they're going to take an area of 6 light years in radius around, I'm not sure if it's radius or diameter, around the center of our Milky Way, and there's supposed to be 10 to 20,000 black holes in that small region, even though our Milky Way is 10,000 light years wide. And again, there's only 5 dozen known black holes in our entire galaxy. So there's about 60 black holes. What's life without a lot of black holes, huh? There hasn't been much credible evidence either to find these other black holes that the scientists say are out there. So why not? Why can't we find those black holes? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go for a break, and I want to go for, let's see. I love playing the angry listener. I like that guy. He's angry. He lets you know what's on his mind. So I'm going to play the angry listener. When we come back, we're going to talk more about black holes, and then later we're going to talk about dark matter. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum! Take him in the teeth, Redheads!
Really?
Kill!
That's really
kill! Bad. Kill! Filthy bastard tummies! I hate him! I hate him!
Okay, well,
You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
You're a member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 with discounts on Commercial Drive at
Audio Pile, High Life Records, Mintage, People's Co-op Bookstore, Stormcrow Tavern, The Rio Theater, JQ Clothing Limited, and Bone Rattle Music Limited.
Just a young boy living in the hub city,
Eastside Compton.
Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about, boy, you can't.
is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Two showed, bumped in every super boat, and told us all how to ride for the west coast.
My people, can you hear me where you at? Throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around. We got the whole world locked down.
Welcome, this is Marco, you're listening to PQ on the west side, and you're listening to AstroTalk on the west side. So, we're talking about supermassive black holes, and we have a supermassive black hole, the center of our galaxy. It's called Sagittarius A star, or SAG A star. It's about 4.5 solar millions of solar masses. So it's, if you had the mass of 4.5 million suns, that's how big our black hole is at the center of our galaxy. But also what happens is when the sun radiates heat and stuff comes on it, it's losing mass. And especially when it becomes a red giant, it loses more and more mass. So a star like Betelgeuse, which is a red giant now, I believe, it just keeps losing more and more mass. It gets lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. So that's just what happened to our sun. It's getting lighter, and there's all kinds of things that happen because of that. So its gravity is not strong, so the planets start moving out a bit, and they start slowing down. So we have a supermassive black hole, the center of our galaxy, and it's getting bigger. It's eating stuff. It loves to eat. It's got a good appetite. It eats other stars. It eats gas, dust, all this stuff. It just loves to eat, and it is supposed to be surrounded by a swarm of other black holes, smaller solar mass black holes. So a solar mass black hole would be 2, 5, 10 times the mass of our sun. And there's supposed to be a big concentration of about 10 to 20,000 black holes in the region with a 3-light-year radius or a 6-light-year diameter around the supermassive black hole, but no one's been able to find them. It's hard to see. Well, you can't see them. You can see their effects they have on the gas and the stars in their vicinity surrounding them, but you can't see black holes, and it's hard to see 26,000 light years away. So Chuck Haley, an astronomer from Columbia University in New York, says Milky Way is the only galaxy we can really study how supermassive black holes interact with little ones, because we can't see their interactions in other galaxies. They're farther away. So in a sense, this is the only lab we have to study this phenomena, end quote. So no one's been able to find the black holes. We only know of 5 dozen black holes in our entire galaxy, and it doesn't say here whether these black holes are all concentrated in the center. So we don't know where they are. It doesn't say where they are. So let's talk more about black holes. So black holes absorb anything that falls into them, including light, hence the name black hole, making them difficult to spot against the dark background of space. Instead, to detect black holes, scientists generally look for ones with nearby companion stars. In such binary systems, the black hole may be tearing apart its partner, giving off radiation, I suppose X-ray radiation, in the process. In the past, there have been failed attempts to find the density cusp. So the density cusp, again, is supposed to be a 6-light-year wide area around our supermassive black hole in the center. It's supposed to contain 10 to 20,000 solar mass black holes, but we can't find it. So there's failed attempts to find the density cusp. The focus has been to look for strong X-ray bursts thought to come from instabilities in the so-called accretion disks of dust and gas that spiral off companion stars into black hole partners. So what's an accretion disk? Well, I guess if we look at our solar system, it used to be an accretion disk. So first it was a big cloud of gas. That's what they call nebula. I believe that's Latin. Nebula means cloud. So there's a cloud of gas that either gets denser or something hits it, like the shock wave from our surrounding supernova, and that is the impetus. It causes all that matter to kind of fall in on itself. So the gravity attracts, matter falls in on itself, it spins and forms a disk. And out of that disk are born the sun and the planets, and that's called an accretion disk, the big disk around it, like a frisbee, with a big sun, a big black hole in the middle. A big sun in the middle, like our sun. So In the past, there's failed attempts to find density cusps. So again, a density cusp is a area concentrated with heavy concentration of black holes. And so they're looking for strong X-ray bursts that are thought to come from instability in the accretion disk of dust and gas that spiral off companion stars in the black hole partners. So I said an accretion disk is an example, is an accretion disk. When our solar system formed, there was an accretion disk. It formed a disk that started spinning. Well, I guess there's accretion disks around stars, in some stars, but in our galaxy center, it's 26,000 light years from Earth, and black hole binaries only very rarely emit big enough bursts of X-rays to easily see them at such a great distance as the galactic center. And they also do that maybe once every 100 or once every 1,000 years. So it's quite rare. And also, it's so far away, 26,000 light years, and it's hard to see. So instead, these astronomers, Haley, a researcher, looked for steadier, less energetic X-rays given off by accretion disks when binaries are relatively inactive. From archival data in the past from Chandra X-ray Observatory, he detected a dozen such X-ray binaries within one parsec or 3.26 light years from the galactic core. His work is in the April 5th issue of the journal Nature. So again, what's a parsec? Well, somehow they describe it by, if you take an angular measurement of 1 degree, I'll have to look it up because I knew what it was before, I don't remember, but a parsec is equal to 3.26 light years, and it's mathematically derived. There's a sense to it. So one day I'll get that logic. Okay, by analyzing the properties and spatial distribution of these X-ray binaries, the researchers extrapolated 300 to 500 X-ray binaries. Extrapolated that 300 to 500 X-ray binaries may lurk in the core of the Milky Way, and about 10,000 isolated black holes without companion stars may also lurk there, says Haley. And quote, "I am really excited to find there are bunches of black holes in the galactic center," end quote. So he's looking for certain signatures, not for the black holes themselves, but for the signatures of the black holes. So the findings may significantly advance gravitational wave research, because knowing the number of black holes in the center of our typical galaxy can help in better predicting how many gravitational wave events may be associated with them all, or with them. All the information astrophysicists need is at the center of the galaxy, the Milky Way. Let's see if I can make sense of that. The findings may significantly advance gravitational wave research, because knowing the number of black holes in the center of a typical galaxy can help in better predicting how many gravitational waves may be associated with them all. All the information astrophysicists need is at the center of the galaxy. So what they're saying is, knowing that there's black holes in the center of our galaxy helps in better predicting how many gravitational waves events may be associated with them. I'm not sure if they're really telling me how, but anyway, let's move on. But researchers caution that making estimates regarding the number of black holes in the galactic core is complicated by the fact that there are likely other sources of X-rays from the center of our galaxy, such as pulsars. So what's a pulsar? A pulsar is a neutron star that spins very fast. It gives off regular pulses, let's say 500 per second or 10 per second. So if a pulsar gives off 500 pulses per second, that means it's spinning around 500 times each second. If it gives off 10 pulses a second, it spins 10 times a second. So these are neutron stars that pulse with regular, each time it spins, it gives off a pulse. I believe they give off pulses of radio waves, but here it looks like they also give off X-rays. So future X-ray observatories may be able to distinguish these different kinds of X-ray sources. So there's X-ray sources from the black holes, and there's also things like pulsars. So future X-ray observatories, more advanced, may be able to distinguish these different kinds of X-ray sources, says Haley. The next generation of observatories should have very sharp eyes, like Chandra, but also they should be able to detect much fainter objects at the galactic center, end quote. So these scientists believe there's 10 to 20,000 solar mass black holes around the center of our galaxy in the Milky Way. It's called Sagittarius A star. That's the black hole, the center, and they think within a 3-mile radius or a 6-mile diameter, there's maybe up to 20,000 solar mass black holes floating around there. So that's interesting. I'll keep you updated. I'll look at this and see if there's any future news on this. But isn't it interesting searching for X-ray sources with a telescope? That sounds like fun, doesn't it? Okay, so let's now talk about dark matter. What is dark matter? Well, they call it dark matter because they don't know what it is. We can't see it. And from their theories and measurements, scientists, astronomers believe that 95% of what we have in our galaxy, we can't see. We don't know what it is. It's either dark energy or dark matter. So they believe galaxies have dark matter, and in a way, it's like a building with a scaffolding, or like the frame of a building. You can't have a building if you don't have a frame to hold it up. And also, you can't have a cup of coffee without having a cup. If you pour the cup of coffee, if you pour the coffee from the pot without a cup, it's just going to spill everywhere on the floor, on the table. There's no way for it to accumulate. But with a coffee cup, this coffee can accumulate, and there you have a coffee. And there you have a cup of coffee. So scientists believe that galaxies are similar. Without dark matter, you won't have a galaxy. There's nothing to pull everything together. So like our coffee cup is a container that holds the coffee, and like the frame of a building is the skeleton, like our body. If we have a skeleton, it holds us up, doesn't it? We can move our arms and everything. If we didn't have a skeleton, we'd just fall to the floor like a big blob of goo. So that's what astronomers believe. Without dark matter, we couldn't have galaxies. So some astronomers have now found a distant galaxy with little dark matter, with very little or no dark matter. They say about 99% of it, of the galaxy, has no dark matter. So they're perplexed. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? So I'm going to read about this. So it's from the CBC, and I erased the name. I wish I didn't do that, but it's just a couple of days ago. And one of the, I'll give you the name of the author in the break, but she's a freelance journalist, and her article is, Astronomers are perplexed about a distance galaxy. Well, I'll try that again. Astronomers are perplexed about a distant galaxy with no dark matter. So the question in the beginning is, how can you build a galaxy without what has been thought to be the scaffolding? So that's the question. Okay, so there's a picture, and it's a bunch of just a blob of stars, and it says, astronomers have found a galaxy that has left them scratching their heads. It lacks what they had believed was the main ingredient for galaxy formation, which is dark matter. So I'm going to start reading the article, and it says, a galaxy far, far away, like Star Wars, far, far away, is perplexing astronomers, not because of what it contains, but because of what it doesn't, which is dark matter. Galaxy NGC 1052, so NGC is a classification system. There's other classification systems, like the Messier. So, for example, I believe the Andromeda galaxy is M31. We call it M because it's the Messier. NGC is another classification system. So galaxy NGC 1052 is about 65 million light years from Earth, and it hasn't been known to astronomers for decades. But upon further study, an international team of astronomers are surprised to discover it had no dark matter, something that they thought that has been seen to be crucial for the formation of galaxies. So says Peter Vandekam in a paper in the journal Nature, and quote, when galaxies begin to form, the first thing that forms, we think, is a little object of dark matter. Dark matter is the scaffolding on which galaxies are built, end quote. In the University of Toronto, they used the Dragonfly Telescope Array. I believe it's located in New Mexico, but I'll get to that later. So in the University of Toronto, with other universities, they use the telescope, or sorry, they use, in the University of Toronto, they use the Dragonfly telescope array to search for galaxies that recently that they've recently discovered. And they call these galaxies ultra-diffuse galaxies. They're large, but extremely low in mass. After they found this galaxy, they renamed it after the dragonfly. In a way, they renamed it. It was called NGC 1052, but they've renamed it NGC 1052-F-DF2. So DF is dragonfly. Scientists then used the larger telescope, including the W.M. Keck Observatory in Hawaii and the Hubble Space Telescope to do follow-up observations. So says Roberto Abraham, a researcher with the project, and quote, "How would you get stars to form in this organized way over such a large part of space unless there's enough gravity to pull all that stuff together? The answer is, we have no idea." Or, "I have no idea." That's what Roberto Abraham says. "There must be more than one way to form a galaxy," end quote. So here there's a nice picture of Roberto Abraham with Peter van de Kom and a team of researchers from University of Toronto and Yale. And they are posing with the 48 lenses of the Dragonfly array at its home site in New Mexico. So they go to New Mexico and Hawaii to do more research. So the next section is called Dark Matter Mystery. When you look out around and out at the stars, what you see and what astronomers can see with complex telescopes accounts for just 5% of what is contained in our universe. Dark matter makes up about 27% of the other stuff in the universe, and dark energy about 68%. But neither dark energy or dark matter are visible. So how do astronomers know that dark energy or dark matter exists? They see how they interact with the rest of the universe. Dark matter or dark energy is believed to be, dark energy is believed to cause the expansion or to cause the acceleration of the expansion of the universe, and dark matter causes something called strong gravitational lensing or bending of light caused by its massive gravity. So, so there's the researchers say there's been some types of galaxies that have formed that contained more dark matter than current galaxy formation theories suggest is possible. But there is no theory as to why dark matter would be missing in a galaxy when it was thought to be their building block. So sometimes they find more dark matter than they think is possible. But now in this one galaxy, NGC 1052-DF2, they find that there's little or very, very little or no dark matter. So what's happening? So what if the assumptions about dark matter are wrong? So says Abraham again, end quote, "You see something like this and you do sort of scratch your head and you think there's something fundamentally wrong with our picture. But for now, I think the evidence of dark matter greatly outweighs evidence against it, but you do need to keep an open mind," end quote. Astronomers are hoping to use the James Webb Space Telescope, the most powerful telescope ever built, now slated for launch in 2020 to do follow-up studies. Yeah, that hurt me. I didn't like that. Another delay of the James Webb Telescope. I think it should have already been in space, but it keeps being delayed. I guess they have to do what they have to do. So says van de Kom, and quote, "The hunt is on. Often the case with the universe is it's more interesting and more surprising than you think. The fact that astronomers continue to discover the unique object of dark matter is something that both van de Kom and Abraham welcome. And they also welcome the fact that they found this galaxy that has little or no dark matter." So there's a conundrum here. They think that there should be more dark matter, or there should be dark matter in galaxies, because it's like dark matter is like the cup. It holds the coffee together. So Or the cup holds the coffee together. If you just poured your coffee out with no cup, it would spill on the table, drip here, drip there, form pools in random places, pour out onto the floor. There wouldn't be anything to cohesively hold it together. But if you have a coffee cup, when you pour the coffee in, it can be held together by the cup. So that's what they think dark matter is. One of the properties of dark matter, and one of the things it does, is it holds the coffee together. So now I'm going to go for a break, but before that, I'm just going to say, when we get back, I'm going to read another article on this dark matter thing to get another perspective. So you're listening to CITR 101.9, and this is Astro Talk with Marco.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Happy. Boing.
You've stated that you believe there could be an infinite number of parallel universes. Does that mean that there is a universe out there where I am smarter than you?
Yes, and also a universe where you're funny.
Okay, all right. Look, if you're so smart, what number am I thinking
13.
Of? 13. It was 13. I was thinking of 13. Okay, that was a lucky guess. What am I thinking right now?
That you've been a huge disappointment to your family.
I wasn't thinking that.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
That's it. Pack it up.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9.
Back. This is Marco, and thank you for that, Sarah. Sarah had just one of the best voices I've ever heard. So she's not with us anymore, and a lot of people come and go here. Sarah, Robin, among others, and so we miss them. I forget the other ones. This previous station manager with the glasses. I'm sorry. I'll remember your name one day. So anyway, we were talking about supermassive black holes in the first part, and then scientists believe there should be a lot more smaller black holes that surround the center of our galaxy. They feel there should be something like 10 to 20,000 smaller black holes, but the way they emit radiation, not very often, and they're so far away, the center of our galaxy is 26,000 light years away, so it's hard to see all this stuff, and there's a confusing array of other X-ray sources, and so they're not sure if they're seeing them all, and they're trying to find how can we see all these black holes that we think should be there. Imagine a big swarm of 10 to 20,000 black holes. That's quite big. Now, second story was astronauts are perplexed that they're seeing a distant galaxy with no dark matter. So why can that be? The dark matter is thought to be the scaffolding of a galaxy. It's like a coffee cup. If you don't have a coffee cup, how can you hold your coffee together? You pour it into the cup, and then it will spill all over the table, spill all over the floor. It would be a big mess. There's no cohesion there, nothing to hold the coffee in together. So the cup is like the dark matter. It holds things together. So now they're seeing a galaxy with no dark matter. And they're wondering why. So the person, there we go. Her name is Nicole Mortellaro. She's from CBC News. And she wrote this article. Let's see what she does. She is a senior writer of science and technology. Nicole has an avid interest in all things science. As an amateur astronomer, Nicole can be found looking up at the night sky, appreciating the marvels of our universe. She is the editor of the Journal of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of several books. Wow, pretty cool. Okay, so here is Nicole Mortellaro, and she gave us her take on this galaxy without dark matter. So we're going to go to another article and see. Here's the one that uses the cup of coffee analogy. So it says, a galaxy without much dark matter. So it's by Camille M. Carlisle, dated March 28th, 2018. She might be from space.com, I'm not sure. So I'm going to start reading this article. So astronomers have found a peculiar object, a fluffy galaxy that has little to no dark matter. They can't have a cup of coffee without the cup. So astronomers have long thought the same goes for galaxies and dark matter. Dark matter forms the cup, and the galaxy coalesces from gas that pours into that cup, pulled there by gravity. So when we pour coffee into a cup, it coalesces, and it's nicely held together. If there's no cup, the coffee flies all over the place. It'll spill on my papers, spill on my shirt, on my computer, on my desk, on the floor. It'll drip here, it'll drip there, it'll make a big mess. There's nothing to hold this coffee together. But with a cup, guess what? Voila, it's magic. Cups are magic. They hold coffee together. So dark matter is the cup, and the gases are the coffee. So the gases pour into that cup, pulled there by the gravity of the dark matter. So that's what astronomers think. That's a nice analogy. Nice tongue twister, too. Okay, so the fluffy galaxy, NGC 1052-DF2, make no sense in the picture. It's coffee without the cup. So see, this is another article. It says a fluffy galaxy. In our first article, it didn't say anything like fluffy galaxy. So this one paints a nice picture. It says fluffy galaxy, and it's coffee, so the galaxy is the coffee. But there's no cup. There's no dark matter to hold it together. With an impressive collection of ground and space-based telescope observations, Peter Van de Kom of Yale and his colleagues, some of whom are from the University of Toronto, found that this diffuse galaxy has at most 1 to 1 400th as much dark matter as expected, based on other similar systems of similar mass. In fact, the best explanation may be that there's no dark matter at all. So it shows a Hubble image of NGC 1052-BigD-BigF2, and it shows the galaxy's diffuse see-through nature. It has so few stars, and it is so sparse, the background galaxies are visible through it. So a peculiar object of a collection of galaxies dominate the beefy elliptical NGC 1052, about 65 million light years on the border of the constellations Cetus and Eridanus. Let's see that again. So they're saying that NGC is a elliptical, or are they saying that there's a bunch of galaxies around it and some of them are ellipticals? I'm not sure what they're saying here. Okay, astronomers already knew that DF2 existed, or NGC 1052-DF2 existed, as it showed up as a collection of dots in survey images. But when the team pointed the dragonfly telephoto array at it, they instead saw a big blob. Intrigued, they looked at it with several other instruments. They discovered that the gallery was so sparse that you could see through it, and its dots looked like globular clusters, albeit strangely bright, similar to the Milky Way's Omega Centauri cluster. So a cluster, just a collection of stars. Also, about twice as large and squashed, as gobbler clusters of similar brightness in the Milky Way. these ancient balls of star loops about their parent galaxies with speeds determined by the let's read that sentence again. It doesn't make sense. These are ancient balls of star loops about their parent galaxies with stars determined by the galaxy's total mass. So these globular clusters, their speeds are determined by a galaxy's total mass. So if you measure the globular cluster's velocity and you'll measure the mass includes within the orbit, then this usually turns up evidence for a whole lot of unseen matter. Not this time. So what do they do? Take a ratio, they measure the globular's velocity, and then they'll measure the mass enclosed within their orbits. And then, I guess, a ratio of that will give the ratio of dark matter. But not this time. The 10 globular clusters the team clocked all move at most a third as fast as expected for a galaxy of this mass. So it's about 200 solar masses, or one-tenth of that, 200 million solar masses, or one-tenth that of the Small Magellanic Cloud. Their motions imply that the enclosed mass is about equal to the mass visible as stars, so there's no extra mass of dark matter. So, in other words, there's essentially no dark matter. NGC 1052-DF2 is not the first tenuous galaxy that is found. Astronomers have seen thousands of so-called ultra-diffuse galaxies, and we'll call them UDGs. So ultra-diffuse galaxy, UDG. The University and the team, the University of Toronto and from Yale and all the team, first uncovered this diffuse galaxy, NGC 1052-DF2, with the Dragonfly Array in 2014. So there's a picture, and there's lots of grad students. So there's several grad students from U of Toronto and U of Yale, and they are standing in front of the Dragonfly Array with Roberto Abram and Peter Van de Kom. I forget which one's from Yale and which one's from Toronto. So the University of Toronto and the team first uncovered the diffuse UDG, the diffuse galaxy, a UDG, NGC 1052-DF2 with the Dragonfly Array in 2014. Said, but none of the other telescopes, I believe, shows this paucity of dark matter. So it's a paucity. There's no dark matter. How did something like this NGC 1052-DF2 form? The team makes suggestions in its March 29th submission to the journal Nature, but nothing seems to fit perfectly. For example, NGC 1052-DF2 could have formed from gas wrenched out of a nearby elliptical, which shows sign of a recent merger, but the UDG's characteristics don't match with what astronomers would expect from that situation. So they say NGC 1052 could have formed from gas wrenched out of a nearby galaxy, but that doesn't make sense. Another possibility for NGC 1052-DF2 forming, remember, they don't find dark matter, so they're wondering, how did it form? How did this galaxy form without dark matter? They're measuring it, and it's measured, the measurement is about the measurement of all the stars in the galaxy. Usually if they measure the galaxy's weight or the mass, wow, isn't it amazing they can measure something's mass so far away? Well, they do this by looking at certain behavior of the matter in there, and from that they can say, oh, I think that it has this much mass. So another possibility for NGC 1052-DF2 forming, it has been stripped of dark matter by the elliptical, of a nearby elliptical galaxy. So the researchers are speculating that this NGC 1052-DF2 previously had dark matter, but a nearby elliptical galaxy stripped it of its dark matter. I'm not sure. Let's read on. Simulations by Ellison Brooks of Rutgers implies when dwarf galaxies pass through the galaxy's outskirts, they lose dark matter. So that So does that mean that the large and small Magellanic dwarf galaxies that circle our galaxy is our galaxy stripping them of their dark matter? So says Alison Brooks of Rutgers, and quote, you can lose about 90% of the dark matter mass before any stars are stripped from the galaxy. That stripping likely caused the stars to puff up, perhaps creating an object like the diffuse dark matterless NGC 1052-DF2. But we would like to know more about the galaxy's trajectory before arguing such a case. So Van de Kalm did not see signs of disturbance about the galaxy, which he thinks disfavors this flyby solution. It's possible any tidal features have faded away beyond detectability, but it is unclear if there has been enough time for that to happen. So they're saying, Alison Brooks says, well, a nearby galaxy could have stripped this dwarf galaxy of its dark matter, but then Van de Kalm saying, well, I don't know if that's possible. Well, I guess we don't know because it happened millions or billions of years ago and we weren't there to see it. And even if we see it, it happens on such a long scale. So that's one of the things about astronomy, the distance scales, the time scales, the energy scales, the speeds, the masses, everything is just really beyond our realm of comprehension because, you know, a big man would weigh about 100 kilograms and car about a ton, and a black hole so much bigger. And when we walk, right? 2 or 3, 4 miles an hour. We go in a car or bus 50, 60 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour. And we're used to these scales, or we used to measurements on these scales. When you are talking about astronomy, you're having something that's millions or billion times the mass of our sun. Now that's big. And light travels so fast, we can't even comprehend it. So again, we're talking about scales that are not comprehensible to us. We can think about them. We go, oh yeah, okay, speed of light. But we don't experience that in our everyday lives. We turn on a light switch and we see the light goes on automatically, but we don't travel as fast as light. And even spacecraft or jet engines that push planes, they don't travel that fast. So it's things that we are not the scales of the times, distances, velocities, something that we don't deal with. So there's one theory that says a nearby elliptical galaxy is ripping the dark matter from NGC 1052, and they don't know if that's the case. But so basically what they're seeing is coffee there, but it's diffuse, it's spread out. There's no cup to hold it in. So if we have a cup of coffee, the coffee is held in by the cup. But with this galaxy, 1052, they don't see any cup, so there's no dark matter. So, but now astronomers think coffee can exist without the cup, which means coffee and cup are both real, separate entities, so says the team. If the presence of dark matter is only an illusion arising because we're using the wrong theory of gravity, then we always see signs of it in the galaxy. But if dark matter can be there sometimes and sometimes absent, then dark matter exists. So I guess this is from another story, but some astronomers are believing we have to modify the theory of gravity to account for what we're seeing, that we can explain away by saying, oh, there's dark matter. Well, some astronomers are thinking, well, I'm going to try to work to see if I can rework the theory of gravity, the equations, and that'll explain what we're seeing. Not really there's dark matter, but basically the equations that we have are not correctly explaining things to account for dark matter. So Stacy McGaw of Case Western Reserve University is not so sure. After several years of study, the strengths and weaknesses of the modified Newtonian dynamics, or MOND, so modified Newtonian dynamics, MOND. So that's a theory they think is there's something wrong with the theory of gravity. So she thinks after studying this MOND theory for several years about this, its strength and weaknesses, that the theory that gravity can do without dark matter by implying gravity works differently when low accelerations are involved. He agrees that NGC 1052-DF2's globulars should move faster in Mon than they do, but he also thinks that the galaxy is weird regardless of whether you accept dark matter's existence or not. So says Stacy McGaw, and quote, "Yes, we and I find it troublesome for Mon, but we don't understand what is happening in this galaxy any better in terms of dark matter," end quote. Both dark matter and Mon, so again, Mon is Newtonian dynamics, or modified Newtonian dynamics, Mond, have their observational points that point their way. But he's squeamish about upping or lowering the fraction of dark matter in any given galaxy just to make sense of the star's motion. So that's an inference, not a prediction, that can be proved or disproved. The Dragonfly team continues to look for more galaxies like NGC 1052-DF2. Of the 23 other diffuse galaxies that astronomers are analyzing, three are potentially similar to this NGC 1052-DF2. With more than one galaxy in hand, astronomers may be able to say more about how these galaxies form and what they mean for dark matter. So there's a galaxy that's about 99% missing dark matter, and they're wondering, why is this happening? Why does this galaxy have no dark matter? They explain it away like it's a coffee without the cup. So you pour out the coffee, it spills all over the place. So that's what's happening. They see this collection of stars. It's very diffuse. It's see-through. You can see things behind it. And they're saying, well, there's no dark matter, and that's why this is happening. So it's like the coffee without the cup. The coffee's splotched out everywhere, and it's not really gathered. So thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Oh, and just to update you, I tried to get Peggy Whitson, an astronomer that spent 665 days in space, try to get an interview with her, but they told me she's so busy. Everybody wants to interview her, so why should they want to talk with a dude from UBC? So I'm trying to get an interview with her. I couldn't. So now I'm going to search for another astronomer. They gave me a list of names, and I'm thinking of getting an astronomer, a candidate astronomer, and we'll see what happens. And I'm also trying to track down Trina Ray. I don't know where she is. She answered me before. I guess she's so busy. And I'll try to track her down for another interview to ask her about the Cassini mission that ended last September. So thank you for listening. This has been Marco, and you have been listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Thanks, Tim.